Stem cell science is changing medicine and our understanding of human development. Learn more with the Stem Cell Channel. Visit UCTV.tv/stemcell.
Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you so much for attending the Sci-Fi Seminar Series. This is a special day for all of us. So thank you all for joining. I'm Shiri. I'm an assistant professor here at the Division of Regenerative Medicine in the Department of Medicine. And I'm also the head of research at the Sanford Stem Cell Institute Discovery Center. So as I mentioned, today is really a special day for all of us because the Sci-Fi Seminar Series, which is the Stem Cell Institute Future Innovators, we are not really doing sci-fi over here, was initiated in 2023 from a very basic need to bring people together to work on their science, to present it to their colleagues, and really get a feedback from their peers. The Sci-Fi Seminar Series is actually trainee-led seminar series, and as most of you already have been attending to it, you can tell that there is a committee that is composed from people here in the building within our community. We have bi-monthly seminars, and it's usually on Thursday at 3 p.m., so I encourage all of you to come attend, give a talk, share your research with all of us, and so we can learn and hopefully to collaborate together. The nice thing about the seminar series is that trainees are not only giving a talk, but they also have mentors outside of their direct mentorships that are allowing them to give that talk and receive feedback from people that are actually outside of their field. This year, we're all very excited to launch this special seminar with the first one today, discussing mainly about science communication and how to communicate complex scientific ideas in a compelling way. So without further ado, I want to welcome here the chairs of this session, Ananya Goyal and Orel Mizrahi, to the podium to introduce the speakers of today.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ananya Goyal, and I'm a proud member of our wonderful sci-fi committee here at the Sanford Consortium. And it is my great honor and pleasure to introduce to you all today our first speaker, Dr. Rob Signer. Dr. Signer is an assistant professor of medicine here at UCSD and is the deputy director of the Stem Cell Discovery Center. He received his bachelor's in bioengineering from the University of Toronto and earned his PhD in cellular and molecular pathology at UCLA. He did his postdoc training in the Morrison Lab at University of Texas Southwestern and established his lab here at UCSD in 2016. He has won numerous accolades and awards, including the V Foundation Scholar, Distinguished Young Investigator Award, and Stellar Faculty Award from our own wonderful Sanford Stem Cell Institute. And that's just a few of his accolades. He has also published over 30 publications in high-impact journals such as Nature, Cell Stem Cell, and most recently, Nature Neuroscience. And one fun fact about Rob is that he was actually in the first cohort of CIRM students ever. And I know a lot of us come from CIRM, so I think it's a really amazing and inspiring CIRM success story that we have here with us today. And without further ado, I'd like to invite Rob to the podium.
Okay, so hi everyone, I'm Orel Mizrahi, and I would like also to introduce Lisa Warshaw, which will tell us the story about how to make a complex science irresistibly compelling. Great storytelling is not just about words, it's about impact. And Lisa Warshaw, which is an expert in global communication, will tell us more about that. Lisa has spent her career translating complex scientific and healthcare breakthroughs into narratives that captivate, educate, and inspire. Lisa obtained a master's degree in communications and global studies and has 2 decades of experience spanning biotech, life sciences, and healthcare. She worked with some of the biggest names in the industry, including Illumina and Novartis, making cutting-edge science accessible to the world. Her international career, spanning Southeast Asia, Central America, and the US, has shaped the expertise in cross-cultural messaging, ensuring that science and innovation resonate across borders. Rather, she's placing high-profile stories in the Wall Street Journal, advising executives on brand-defining messaging, or navigating the intersection of business and healthcare. Lisa is redefining what it means to be a communicator in a globalized world, ensuring that innovation in science doesn't just happen, it's seen, heard, and remembered. And one fun fact regarding Lisa is that the then Texas governor, Rick Perry, blessed her unborn baby in a conference during the Ebola pandemic outbreak. And with that, I would like to welcome Lisa to the stage.
Lesson number one about giving a compelling talk is do something to hook in your audience right from the get-go. All that work and all that preparation, your audience is going to decide in the first 30 seconds if they're going to listen to what you have to say that day. So do something to hook them in. Do you want to spend that 30 seconds being like, "Hi, I'm Rob. I work in the Cigner lab. My lab works on stem cells." Or do you want to do something to capture their imagination? Think of a TV show or a movie, right? How often is there that cold opening, something that's happening before those opening credits run? They are there to hook that audience right from the start. You can do that opening in your talk, and then you can introduce yourself and thank everyone for inviting you and for the kind introduction. The first 30 seconds will dictate how the rest of your talk go. Make them count.
Make them memorable, okay? So we are a headline-driven society. Raise your hand if you get your news by reading headlines in a feed. Literally, you all raised your hand. We are driven by headlines. Make your talk memorable, right? We are headline-driven people. That's what captures your attention. If the headline sucks, you don't read the article. If the first paragraph is dull, you don't keep reading. Give it all you got at the front, and then your audience will stay engaged.
So give us an example. You've written headlines that have shown up in major publications. What's your favorite headline you've ever written?
Oh my gosh, I was working with a PI at UT Southwestern Medical Center. He was a cardiologist and he had the most boring research. But it actually was sort of cool when you started breaking it down from a storytelling perspective. He was studying the hearts of marathon runners. Okay, cool. You can run really far. That's great. The exercise equivalent of a cheeseburger was on the front page of the Wall Street Journal on the top fold. And I was like 25 years old and it was so cool.
That's awesome.
What is, when you start a talk, what has been the most memorable, awesome kickstart that you've had?
So I like to do different ones and it's probably the thing I spend almost the most time on when I'm preparing a talk is that intro. I really wanna hammer it. And I was giving an award talk actually, and it's the only time I've ever used this particular introduction. And the theme of the talk that day was about balance and flexibility and how there are different ways to achieve a similar goal. And I had this idea that like, if you take a dollar, right, you can make a dollar by having a dollar bill, you can take a dollar by having four quarters, and it turns out there are 293 different ways that you can make a dollar. And so that was the analogy that I was gonna use, and I remember talking about it at home before, and my kids asked me, they said, "What do you mean that there's all these ways to make a dollar?" And I just started rattling them off. I'm like, "Well, you can have a dollar, you can have four quarters, you can have three quarters, two dimes, and a nickel, you can have 20 nickels, you can have, you know, 10 dimes, you can, and so on and so forth. And I was just rattling them off. And it occurred to me that, well, maybe I should rattle them off in the talk. And so I started this talk with a picture of a dollar bill up there. And I said, "This is a dollar." And then there was, the next slide showed a different variety of coins and I would read it out. And I kept going and going and going. And I did about 12 of these to the point where it crossed over from where the audience was like, "What is this guy doing?" to they're just laughing at me at this point. And then all of a sudden I tell them, there are a whopping 293 ways to make a dollar. And that spun into the talk and was a theme that I got to carry throughout the seminar I gave that day. That one was a fun one. I'm gonna have to break it out again one day.
That is a good one. I like that. And it's cool and it's engaging and it's culturally relevant, right? We all know how to make a dollar. So you see these giant lips up here. So if there's one thing that you take away from today, it's KISS. And no, it's not the KISS that this random dude just gave me. It is to keep it simple, stupid. KISS.
There is nothing more important in a talk than keeping it simple. And this comes through in so many different ways, right? When I see people giving a talk, they are overloading with information, right? They are understandably wanting to show all of the work that they've done. You're a graduate student, you're a postdoc, you've done endless amounts of experiments, right? You are proud of all that work that you've done and you want to show it. But when you're up there telling a story, no one needs to see supplementary figure 18 on one of your slides. It is just not there for that purpose. How do you simplify what you're going to tell? Less information allows you to focus on the most important information. When you show supplementary figure 18, no one cares about figure 1 anymore. You're giving it equal importance. Focus on the most important things and make those appear on your slides and be the emphasis of your talk.
So how do we do that? Much like we're a headline-driven society, we're also a soundbite-driven society, right? We like pithy, catchy, quick ways of conveying information. So we speak in soundbites. So one of my favorite soundbites that I heard an awesome researcher recently give in a seminar on aging was that in the United States, we spend $53 billion on Botox and bullshit.
I know who that researcher was. I mean, I love using soundbites and coming up with good ones. So in a recent talk, I was highlighting that stem cells really like to avoid stress. And the way I phrased it to my audience, I said, stem cells are Zen cells, right? There are opportunities to give these ones. When I talk about stem cells have this long life, right? They do things slowly and they live long. And I say other cells, they live fast and die young. Those types of sound bites are really what makes things memorable. And so when you're having all those words and all the ways to describe something, think about the ways that you can cut them down. And I know this is hard. I'm gonna go back to a Hollywood example, right? You go and see a movie, right? There are movies that are an hour and a half. There are movies that are 2 hours. There are movies that are 3 hours. I don't like movies that are too long. I'm sure most of you feel the same way. So my brother is a Hollywood writer and producer. And he said to me, there's one way to always know from the beginning if a movie's gonna be too long. He said, if the writer and the director are the same person, the movie's gonna be too long because the director does not wanna cut that writer's words. It's okay to cut your words. Focus on the most important things to deliver the most impactful message.
So we've talked a little bit about making it memorable and keeping it short and pithy, but also use analogies, right? We're talking about science. It's dense. It's complex. Not everyone gets it. So how do we make it compelling? We use analogies that are accessible for a general audience to understand. One of my favorite analogies is from this fabulous researcher sitting next to me. You want to share your...
Well, I think I know the one you're talking about because I use it all the time. In fact, I used it in a lecture I gave this morning. And again, it's one about the process of going slowly and how it ensures quality. And I use a video from an old I Love Lucy episode where her and Ethel are working in the chocolate factory and the chocolates are coming out on that conveyor belt nice and slow and they're keeping order and they have good quality control. And then things slowly start to speed up and it's becoming a little bit more challenging. And then it really speeds up and the chocolates are going into the waste, onto the counter, into Lucy's shirt, into her hat. Hilarity ensues. And it is something that people see, and they've gotten a series of complex scientific stories reduced down to a 45-second video clip that makes everyone laugh, no matter how old they are, if they know I Love Lucy, if they are from any country in the world. It is just comedy, and it perfectly explains the science that I'm trying to convey. So what are the analogies that you can use? Think about how can you take that complex idea and make it simple? Because your job as a speaker is to be a translator, right? You really are there to translate complex ideas and make them simple for everyone to understand.
And it doesn't just have to be an analogy with words, right? As Rob's talking about, it can be the usage of visuals, videos, graphics, infographics. All of these things are forms of communication that you should feel comfortable leveraging when you're talking about your science. And please scrub the jargon. Go from jargon to Jedi, like my buddy C-3PO here. Okay, your acronyms, your special protein letters and number combinations that some person developed when they discovered something, not everyone gets it. Not everyone understands what NCCN guidelines are or what PCSK9 stands for. You are sitting in an echo chamber when you talk like that, and your message won't resonate. So get rid of all the jargon. There's an amazing resource called ChatGPT. You can literally put your talk in there and say, make this more accessible to an eighth grade audience. And it will help you just see, okay, wait, there's a way for me to make this more digestible so that it will engage the people with whom I'm speaking.
And that idea of simplifying it down to like a grade school level almost, it practically works. So I gave a lecture on blood cell development, a class to a third graders, my daughter's third grade class last year. And in preparing for that, you know, I had to think a little bit differently about how I wanted to communicate certain ideas and what I was going to tell them. And I ended up finding a bunch of fun facts about blood, right? And how many blood cells we make and all of these things. And it was the first time I had ever included that in any presentation that I gave. I thought it was so valuable to communicate it that way to third graders that I spoke at South by Southwest earlier this year, and I included the exact same statistics in that talk. And I thought that it was so important after that that I gave a lecture to a bunch of PhD students and I included the same fact again. So finding what was most simple actually helped me make my higher level talks even more accessible and more important. So really delivering it in that way is so key.
Okay, but you didn't start there.
Oh no, definitely not.
So this is a journey, right? And storytelling, like any good story, has an arc and it has a narrative. So the very first time I heard someone preparing for a scientific presentation was in a hotel bathroom. And they're standing in the mirror and they're timing themselves and they're looking at like their intonation and fumbling over their words. They finished, they looked at me and they said, well, how did I do? And I didn't even know how to respond because I was like, I don't even know what you said. And I'm like a well-educated, well-read individual. I consider myself fairly smart. I had no clue what this person was trying to say. So what good is the incredible advancements that you're making and the breakthroughs that you're striving for and the innovation that we all want to see in healthcare and science if we can't tell people the importance of it? So start somewhere. Try it. See what sticks for you. And you'll be surprised how far communications can take you.
And you're all scientists, right? Every time you communicate it, it's science again, right? You're testing it out. Did it work? Did it not work? How can I get better? There's always new things that you'll pick up. Should this data come before this data, right? Like, how is that working? Did this analogy work or not work, right? Did that image work or not work? Tinker it with it, right? You're gonna almost always have multiple opportunities to give similar talks and have similar experiences. Make it a learning experience for yourself, right? You don't start off by being able to give world-beating talks. You start off with, whew, I survived that one, right? And so this is how these things go. And
it's the same thing with writing, right? Like, I, as a former journalist and a writer, my first draft is simply that. It's a draft. The work comes in the revision, right? So it's in all forms of communication.
And the jargon matters there too. Like, all the abbreviations, all that alphabet soup that we have in everything that we write and communicate, leave it out of your papers too. Unless you're going to use, you know, maybe if there's one or two that sticks. But as someone now who, you know, reviews papers, when I get things to review that I'm considered an expert in, if it's full of, you know, abbreviations and everything, I'm lost, right? Make things as explicit as possible. Make it clear. Make it understandable. Remember, you know, and we'll talk about this more probably later, but in any audience, there is going to be a mixture of who's there. Keep it simple for everyone, right? Even the most advanced people are going to enjoy it more when you keep it simple. So I guess, you know, you heard the preparation going on in the bathroom, right? Let's talk a little bit more about preparation, right? Because I truly believe in the adage that, you know, and this is a John Woodenism. So my, you know, the greatest coach by my standards that there is, that said that failing to prepare is preparing to fail. So preparation is the number one most important thing that you can do for yourself to get ready to give a talk or a presentation or whatever that is. And there are lots of ways to prepare. How do you prepare for something like that?
So I prepare executives for investor presentations, I prepare scientists for AACR and ASCO, I prepare CEOs for media interviews with top-tier outlets. The number one thing I tell them to do is take a deep breath. Find some center, find some balance, find some calm. We all get scared and nervous, a little anxious, right? And it's hard. You're kind of in the spotlight and it's scary. So take a deep breath. Let's start with that.
Well, so I that leads to a good question for our audience, right? Like, who here would consider themselves getting nervous before public speaking? Almost everyone's hand. Who considers themselves getting really nervous before public speaking? Okay, still lots of hands. Here's the thing. Everyone gets nervous. It doesn't matter how many talks you've given. It doesn't matter how many audiences you've been in front of. If you're sitting there getting ready for a talk, you're thinking about how you're going to get up and give that talk. You are feeling that some butterflies in your stomach. And by far, the best way to calm that nervousness is to prepare, is that you know what you're getting up there to do, right? And that means, like, practicing your talk, right? Really saying it, understanding that each slide that you have in your presentation, if you're using slides, what is that specific point there that you want to make, right? The best talks, right? Some of the best talks that are out there are TED Talks, right? When people get signed up to do TED Talks, those start 6 months in advance of preparation. They're practicing. And they mandate that they memorize every word of what they're going to say, right? There's nothing wrong with memorizing a track, but you don't want to have it partway memorized, right? If you're focused on being really on that track and then all of a sudden you're like, can't remember your words, people can tell, like, you're sort of struggling through it. So you either need to go all the way and have that whole thing memorized, or you need to understand that you're going to be up there talking with What's the key bullet point? What's the key message? What are you going to deliver concisely on each slide?
Okay, so here's a couple ways to do this. What are your three key messages? You can take as little or as much time as you need to convey those key messages. Go up there with a goal. What do I want people to walk away with? What do I want them to know? What do I want them to do? Now, how are the three ways I'm going to get them there? And it is okay to repeat those key messages time and time again. And we'll talk about this when you get to your Q&A and people are asking you questions and you're like, oh, I don't know, I didn't think about that. No. We'll teach you how to get back to your key message. So you don't have to memorize your whole talk. You can, great. Kudos to you for having a great memory. But you all can remember three important things and you can all deliver three key points. We have four today. There's a test at the end. Do you know what they are? So in preparation for giving a talk, it's not just the talk itself, okay? So I had a PR professor at UCLA many decades ago. I was telling the team here earlier that we were sitting in class. Does anyone remember the story of Octomom? No, she was this like woman who had octuplets. It was meant to be this like cute People magazine cover story of like eight bundled babies. Turned out to be a total disaster. And we were sitting in PR class and Oprah Winfrey calls my professor and we're all like on the edge of our seats. Anyways, she was going to go on Oprah and my teacher was the PR person for Octomom. And so we got an incredible crash course in crisis comms. Long story short, Oprah says, make sure she puts herself together. The first two letters in presentation are the same as in pretty. This is super judgmental, and I hate to say it, but you're being judged. You're being judged on what you're wearing, how you're sitting, how you're talking. If you're slumped down in your seat like this, no one's paying attention to you, right? So there's a few things you can do when you're preparing. Don't wear busy patterns. Don't wear bold statement earrings and necklaces, right? Don't wear kind of distracting clothes and jewelry. Present yourself in a nice, simple fashion and form so that people are paying attention to what you're saying, not just how you look. Okay? I literally fix ties of chief medical officers on the weekly before they go on camera, right? You want to look presentable. Another really important thing is, oh God, there's so many.
Well, one of the things that I like to do to prepare is I want to know the space, right?
Yeah.
So this week I gave a talk at AACR and, you know, I had a few hours the day I got in before my talk the next morning and I went and I found the room that I was going to be speaking in and I wanted to know what it looked like and I wanted to know what the podium was like and what the AV equipment was like and, you know, all of a sudden I got there and I found out, oh, you're not gonna have the presentation view of your presentation. So if you have notes, forget it, they're not gonna be accessible. That was an important thing to know before I got up there to speak the next day. You know, I knew how big the room was and that there were screens on either side of me and so that I couldn't use a pointer, for it. Seeing that space and understanding where you're gonna be, if you have that opportunity, can help you get into that right frame of mind to go in and deliver a killer talk.
Didn't you also discover a teleprompter app?
I did, which was interesting. That was the first time I had ever used that.
Yeah.
And
that's okay.
To mixed reviews. Like, I think that there were some real benefits of it and some drawbacks of it as well. But like you said earlier about taking a deep breath. So not only before you start, but you have natural ways to do that in a talk, right? Every time you switch slides, take a deep breath, right? Easy way to do it, right? Remind yourself that, slow yourself down. It's okay, like you're going at that pace.
During a Q&A, and also this is important when you're speaking to the media, you know, you kind of get like a curveball question. And a lot of people fill the empty space when they're thinking with, It's a moment to pause, stay silent, take a deep breath, articulate your thought, and then deliver it. And you'd be so surprised. It works. It's helpful. We're very uncomfortable with silence, right? It's like an awkward thing for most of us. But that moment of silence will really enable you to articulate your key message and your takeaway succinctly. So I highly recommend that one too.
And all of this is when you're out there presenting yourself. This is the title of our slide behind us. Like, you are the living logo. You are a representative of more than just you, right? You're a representative of you. You might be a representative of the lab you come from. You might be a representative of the institution that you come from. In some cases, you're a representative of the country that you come from, right? And where you are from or where you are training, all of these things. And I think that reputation and what you represent probably goes well beyond that, right?
It does. And you're your brand, right? We each have our own personal brand. It's not just your work. It's who you are, how you add to the conversation in the public discourse, how you subtract from the conversation in the public discourse, what you're posting on social media. It's not the division of your personal and professional life anymore. It is all you. It is all your brand. You are more than your name. It is how you present yourself, where you present yourself, and the intention and passion that you give it. So you are a living logo of who you are. Be thoughtful of how you convey that.
And take time to think about what it is you want to convey, how you want people to view you and do those things. Like you said, it's just a sad reality, but we are always being judged, right? You get up there to give a talk. It doesn't matter if it's in a lab meeting or a floor meeting or in the sci-fi seminar series or, you know, at AACR, right? You're in front of a crowd. Those people are judging you. And no matter how big or how small that crowd is, I say that every single talk is a job interview. No matter what, people are making decisions about you and your science and your ability to communicate and to engage with people. And so we talk about being a brand or being a logo, and obviously, you know, we put what we thought was maybe one of the most recognizable logos, but they also have a slogan, right? Everyone knows the slogan, right? It's just do it. So what are the things, Lisa, that you would say that you should just always do when presenting? What are the do-its?
Okay, so number one, be gracious. Thank your people for giving you their attention. Thank you for having me. It's such a pleasure to be here. I'm totally nervous. That's okay. So just showing some gratitude and graciousness makes you human. And that's a great place to start. So I would definitely say that actions and nonverbals speak louder than words, right? So I slump down in my seat and you're like, I'm not going to take her seriously. If I'm just sitting here like this, I'm kind of boring and I'm speaking in this very monotone voice. No, gesticulate, use your hands, use intonation in your voice, make it exciting, make it memorable, have a conversation. Don't sit and speak at somebody. Have a conversation with them, right? So those actions, those nonverbal cues are really important. Speak clearly, speak with confidence, and show some passion for what you're talking about.
This is a good one because this is your work, right? Like, think about all the time and energy you pour into doing experiments in the lab, right? All the pain, all the failed experiments, right? All the late nights, all that opportunity. Now you have the chance to tell the world about the best parts of it, right? And how important that is. And like, there should be nothing better, right? Like, you get to share all that work and what it means to you with others and to make them realize that, man, that is important. That was a really huge amount of work that's really advanced something. I'm going to forever think about the world just a little bit differently because of the work that person just did and the way that they communicated it to me.
Okay, so I would boil that down to be colorful and be in control, right? We've talked about this. Make it memorable. Be succinct. Speak in sound bites. Use analogies. Make it fun. Guys, this is fun. Communicating is fun. Storytelling is cool. You have this opportunity to do it. So think of some of these things before you give your next presentation. Also, give your undivided attention. And we'll get to like the do's and don'ts when you get to a Q&A, but like don't pick up your phone. Don't check your watch. Like be here, be present, be in the here and now. We do a lot of stuff on Zoom and Teams and all these different online platforms now. You're picking up your phone and you're staring down like this, you're gonna lose your audience. So stay present, stay engaged. Eye contact, another really good one. You in the pink sweater, I adore you already because like I can see you're picking up what I'm putting down and I'm so excited that like I see one person in the room who's like, oh yeah, I can do that. I like what this person is saying. And that's gratifying, right? We're an instant gratification culture. It's why Insta cameras are like all the rage, right? You don't want to wait for your film to be developed. You want it now. It's also why we read headlines.
And also, we all have imposter syndrome, right? Like everyone gets up there and they're like, should I be here? What? I don't. If you're there, you are meant to be there. And I promise you, when you're talking about your work, there ain't no greater expert in the world than you. That is your work. You are the expert. Present like you know it, right? All right.
Okay, but when you don't know it.
Well,
oh, you guys, the do nots. The list is so long, but we have a short one that we've kind of prepared. Number one, and I've said this now three times, so I really mean it. Don't relax your posture, okay? It looks awful. I did an interview with the CEO of a company whose name shall remain unnamed, and they were on CNN, and homeboy was literally sitting like this, and I was like, dude, I'm like texting him. I'm like, you're on CNN. Sit up straight. Put your shoulders back. Put your chin up. Look like the authoritative figure that you are on CNN for the love. It was during COVID. I was going to give him a little grace, but not too much. So please, when you get up there, present yourself. Present yourself in a way that your mother and father would be proud of.
Well, I have a couple that like pet peeves about people's talks, right? Don't put a title on a slide that doesn't say anything, right? If the title of your slide is stem cells, right? That doesn't tell me anything. The title of your slide should be the conclusion or the main point of your slide. In fact, I personally don't like any words on slides except for the title. So you should be able to read the title of my slide and know exactly what it is that I'm there to tell you about that slide.
Also, if you really want to tell an awesome story, take your slides when you're done with them and lay them out. Now read your titles as if they were a single story. Do they actually tell a story? Remember, we read headlines. No one reads slides. And for the love, do not read your slides, please. Most people know how to read. They can read your slides.
And don't put stuff on slides if you're not going to talk about it. A slide should have one piece of information on it at most. Don't put 17 graphs on a slide and talk about one of them and ignore the other 16. And don't include a slide if you're going to end up being like, well, I don't have time to talk about this slide, so I'm just going to skip over it. You should be prepared enough to know exactly how much time you have and how many slides you need that you should never be like, well, I'm just going to skip over these next four slides and get to my conclusion. No, everything in there needs to be deliberate. So don't put in extraneous stuff. Make good decisions about what you include and talk about it clearly.
Okay, also, don't be negative. Don't like refute things directly. No one wants to hear you air your dirty laundry of your mishap in your research or your scientific brouhaha. Like, keep it upbeat, keep it positive. Like, you're here to present the good stuff, right? Listen, we all know bad stuff happens and setbacks occur, but don't be negative.
I've got one more sort of controversial don't do it before we move on. And this one is like, if you take any class ever on communication, the first thing they tell you is you should have an overview slide and tell people what it is you're going to talk about, and then talk about it, and then tell them what you talked about, right? It's like this famous, who here opens a book and reads the table of contents? Overview slides to me are the most boring possible thing you can include in a slide. Get into the story, hook me into that story and start telling me that story. I don't need to know what's coming in chapter 2, 3, 4, and 5. If you tell me the end of the movie before I watch it, I'm not gonna watch the movie. So if it's me, maybe controversial, skip the overview.
I don't know. We kind of debated about this one a little bit because there's the old adage that like, tell me what you're going to tell me, and then tell me what you just told me so that I walk away remembering it. And there's like an old PR saying is you have to say it 7 times before it sticks. So it is a little controversial. We'll let it slide on this one. Maybe we agree to disagree.
Well, I know we've spent lots of time here already, but you do lots of media training, right? Where you're teaching people how to answer questions from journalists. Is there one thing that you can tell people that will give them the advice for how, what the best way is to answer questions? Is there something that they can remember? Because it's always, that's part of the nervousness is you're like, what questions am I going to get? How am I going to answer them, right?
Okay, so I've said this one before, but say it 7 times so it sticks. Pause. Articulate your response. Think about what you're going to say and then say it. That would be my number one. The other one is when you're responding, lead with your answer. Lead with your conclusion. Don't give me a 5-paragraph essay / diatribe on the response. That will chill the room. You will not get quoted in the media article because they will be like, I don't even know what that person just said. Give me the answer. And then give me some proof points. Make them memorable. Make them compelling. Feed me a soundbite. Give me something that I can use to help illustrate your story. That's...
And what about like when there's like a question that like drives you sort of off topic and like is not on like what you really want to deliver on?
Okay, so... This is such a great one. And please, if you remember something from today, I want you to remember your ABCs. It's the art of what we call bridging in communications. You will see it in your Q&As. You will see it in your media interviews. You will hear it during your thesis presentations. People are going to lead you in questions. They're going to tell you something is wrong. They're going to ask you a question you might not know the answer to. So the first thing you do, A, you acknowledge the question. That's a great question. Thank you so much for asking it. What I'm really here to talk to you today about is learning the art of scientific communications. It's really important because we're making incredible advancements in healthcare, and I want to impact positive patient outcomes. So you can ask me any question. I have 3 things I'm trying to get done here today. Those are my messages. So I don't like your question. I don't have to answer it. I'm going to acknowledge it. I'm going to bridge to one of my awesome key messages, and then I'm going to conclude. It works every time. ABC, acknowledge, bridge, conclude.
And I love like the acknowledging the question, but something that I see a lot of people do sometimes when there's a question that sort of catches them off guard, and this is another thing I advise people never to do, is they'll respond with, oh, wow, I've never thought of that. Not a great way to display yourself, right? It's your work. You should have thought of damn well everything, right? So yes, it's a great question. I've thought a lot about that. We're still working on trying to figure out the answer. We don't know it yet, but we're really excited to get there. You're in a committee meeting and you're like, oh, great question. I've never thought of that. Bad way to go. So really think about how you can take that question and bridge it back, as Lisa said, to what your message is and your key conclusion. And it's totally okay to say that you don't know the answer.
It's okay. And you should say that. And you know what the follow-up should be? That's a really great question. I don't know the answer to that, but I'm really looking forward to diving deeper into the research that would help me respond to that question the next time we meet. Or we'll follow up with you, right? I am constantly sending emails to reporters after my executives give media interviews. Here's the additional information that we didn't have on hand when we spoke to you. Please let me know if there's something I can do to further assist you. You can keep feeding the conversation, right? So you are your living logo. Hold on. Nope. We got to go back to this. You are your brand.
We're running out of time.
Oh, well, then we're going to keep going. You are more than your name. So please, when you're presenting, keep that in mind.
All right. So we talked about being the expert, right? You're the expert on your research, but how do you go above and beyond that, right? You're telling people you know something, but say something that really matters. How do you elevate yourself above that work? How do you become a thought leader?
How did you become a thought leader?
Well, part of being a thought leader was being able to communicate my science effectively, right? Really being able to explain it to all people. And I found that that had opened doors of accessibility, you know, and that came through media interviews, ultimately. It came, you know, speaking at South by Southwest, but there was really sort of one sort of campaign almost that sparked it. So back in, you know, we always say back in March of 2020, but actually probably in January and February of 2020, I was sort of became obsessed with COVID and hearing about this virus and before everyone was talking about it. And I was following the news closely and wanted to know all these things. And all of a sudden, you know, we got to that critical juncture in March when, you know, all of a sudden it was like the night sort of the world changed, right? Like the NBA canceled their games or canceled their season. And, you know, there were all sorts of events that happened that day. And it was like, what do we do and how do we do it? And I had sort of been reading a lot of the stuff and felt like as a scientist, I was in position to do something. And
slash stockpiling toilet paper.
Well, you know, don't want to run out. But we had neighbors that were like continuing to throw block parties and things like that. And we, you know, I love those neighbors. They're awesome, but that was frustrating. And so I realized that people didn't understand exactly what was going on yet. Well, none of us did, but some of us even less so. And so I put up a post on Facebook to communicate what I thought about what was going on and what my understanding was based on all the reading and following it, all that I had done. And that Facebook post went viral. And viral-ish. Well, okay.
So let me jump in.
I guess there's scales.
Okay,
here.
So when you know an amazing communicator who says, this is getting a lot of traction, let's send it to the San Diego Union-Tribune. Okay, so for the first time in the history of the San Diego Union-Tribune, they've taken this Facebook post, which this amazing communicator has turned into an op-ed, and they put it on the front page of the San Diego Union-Tribune. Okay, so now we've taken something that we're using to educate our neighbors with, and now we're bringing it to a bigger, broader community of people here in San Diego.
And I thought from there, I was like, okay, this
that
is...
That was fun.
It was fun. It's resonating. How can we make this main message resonate even more? And so took something simple and did a little math and created an infographic.
Okay, but you have to know an awesome artist for this too.
Well,
okay.
So who's seen this infographic before, remembers it from COVID? Anyone?
Couple people?
Few hands. Well, posted this infographic and-
On X.
On X. Form,
then known as Twitter.
Yeah. And within hours, days, within a week for sure, it started turning into this.
This infographic went viral. And it was used hundreds of times.
It was adapted in at least 40 different languages across 100 different countries. On every major media outlet, it was used by politicians and by health executives and all of these things. And it started, again,
at our
kitchen
table.
I didn't want my neighbors to have a block party during a pandemic. So this was an exposure to media for the first time. There were all sorts of interviews that were coming out from this and being able to communicate something simple that, frankly, was outside my particular expertise, but I was able to communicate the sort of key features of this in a way that was accessible. And I did it in words and I did it in pictures, and that was really key.
This campaign went on for weeks. Weeks. Like, I was kind of getting over it. I was like, another media interview? We did a media interview with like the Houston Chronicle on like the mathematical equation he used to derive the infographic. So, but this is an important kind of communications campaign to talk about when we're talking about thought leadership, because we're using our science, because we're great scientists in the room, but we're using visuals, we're using all the mediums we have at our fingertips. We're using social media, Facebook and X and Twitter, and we're using the media to help tell our story. We're using opinion pieces. We're using factual pieces. You're really pulling all of those tools that you can put in your toolkit to tell your stories. And so I highly recommend that you consider that.
And like, go outside the box here. Like, I got an email one day that said, well, we want to put you up for an opportunity to speak at South by Southwest, but you need to provide me a video, you know, in the next day of like, of that people will vote on. And I was in the middle of nowhere in the Canadian countryside driving a rental car. Passenger picks up the phone and says, start speaking. And I'm driving and I give a riff on aging and stem cells. And that was the video. And that's where the, you know, the $53 billion of on Botox and bullshit
was born.
Yeah. And it led to, you know, two panels at South by Southwest this year and the opportunity to engage with entirely new audiences and to communicate science to a group of people who asked me questions ranging from, have you studied this gene in mitochondria, to what do you think about the political situation and its impact on scientific funding, to should I inject stem cells into my back? And so that audience was all engaged by a talk that was scientific, that taught them something, and that opportunity to elevate beyond the work, to be a thought leader, to teach them about stem cells, to teach them about aging and longevity. You have that opportunity every time you speak, right? What can you say that is going to bring you above just the work that you're presenting?
Okay, so we're master storytellers, clearly, because we're almost at time. So let's pop over to our last slide, which is your storyteller, right? And I think we've made this pretty clear as we've been talking. You really have an opportunity to translate something complex into something that's irresistibly compelling, but you got to know your audience, right? That's first and foremost.
But no matter who your audience is, and I think I started to say this earlier, speak to a general audience, right? There are people in the room that are experts, and there are people in the room that are beginners, right? There are students in the room, and there might be Nobel laureates in the room, right? You need to speak to all of them. And I promise you, if you speak in a clear way to take that complex and to make it simple, even those experts, what they're going to think is, wow, that person really knew what they were talking about because they could explain it clearly. And the only tweak that you should make there, the only difference in that audience is maybe one or two background slides different. But otherwise, the main point that you're communicating should almost always be the same. You explain it clearly in a way that everyone is going to understand, when no matter who's in that audience.
Also, be human. Be vulnerable, right? Like, be yourself. Don't be a robot. It will really just help show the passion behind what you're doing and why you're doing it. Otherwise, you're just another cog in the wheel.
And I used to never really share personal stories in talks, and you know, I started doing it more recently, right? So I do research that is involved in cancer research, and I lost my dad to cancer when I was 10 years old, right? That's not a story that I used to ever tell, but sometimes I do now, right? Sometimes it falls into part of those things and instantly draws new connection to the audience, right? They're seeing you in a different light. They're understanding you. Being human, right? Sometimes I'm talking about coaching my kids' sports teams, right? As part of my talks, if they fit in the right way, I'm human and we're all human, and convey that, right? You are not there just to read us figure legends, right? You are there to communicate, to touch us, to explain to us what's the difference. And so when you go into that talk, you know, you're probably thinking about, well, how am I going to put this talk together? The number one thing you should be thinking about is, what is the goal of my talk today, right? Because every single time you give a talk, there should be a key overarching goal. And that goal can be very different, right? You know, there are PhD students, you know, they have thesis committee meetings. I tell them, okay, in your first committee meeting, the goal of your talk is to convince your committee that you're not a moron, right? That you are someone who's going to be able to get a PhD, you know? Year three, you're in a committee meeting, you're advancing. The goal is to teach that, show them you're making progress. You're on the way to getting a PhD. That last sort of fifth year before your thesis defense, you've got a meeting. It's like, I don't need to explain to them that I understand what a Western blot is anymore. I need to show them, look at this beautiful body of work I've put together that comprises original research that is deserving of me to get a PhD. It's a different thing. One of the first times I gave a talk about some my most important work as a postdoc, just before I got up to the podium, my PI said to me, he said, the editor of Nature and the editor of Cell are sitting in the audience. Your job is to convince them that they want to publish your paper. After the talk, the editor of Nature came up and said, we would love you to submit your paper to us. And the paper got published in Nature, right? That is a mission in a talk. Sometimes that talk is, I want to convince these people that I'm a great colleague and that they should hire me. And I'm going to contribute scientifically and socially and just to the overall environment. Every talk needs to have a goal. And think about that goal before you get up to give that talk, before you're even preparing that talk. What is the goal of that talk that day? Which is to say, don't just speak, start something, right? You're not just there to deliver the message of the science. There's so much more that you can do.
So some talks flicker out, and some talks spark something. They ignite something. Have your audience leaving thinking about a new question to think about, a new way to solve a problem, a new way to approach something, a creative way to engage somebody in a conversation. Your talks should ignite excitement and engage your audience and move your brand forward.
And they're not going to do that based solely off of data. They're going to do that off the story that you tell them. They're going to leave based on how you inspire them. You want them to walk out of that room and be ready to run through a wall, right? Anything is possible. So I know we're running a little late, but we would love to take questions as well from, I know, our moderators and our audience. So if people are willing to stick around, I think we're willing to stick around a little bit longer. So.
Okay, it worked. Well, I don't know about you all, but I feel like the quality of my talks just went up like tenfold, so I'm very excited. Does anyone in the audience have any questions for our... Okay, yes, let's maybe start over there.
Yeah, so I had a question with the Q&A. So sometimes when we get asked questions, the person like asks us 2-3 questions. I have a couple of questions for you, and this. And when we are like sort of like parsing through those questions, it's very easy to sort of get lost in what the person is trying to convey. And you're like, oh yeah, I understood the first question, but the second and third question sort of got lost in me trying to think about the answer for the first question. So one is, how do you go about handling the situation? And second, how do you sort of break down and make sure that you answer all of those questions without like not taking the time away from everyone else's, like just one person asking the question?
That is such a good question because it happens all the time. So A, you can just say, okay, hold on. Let me make sure I understood the first part of your question. Repeat the question back. and then have them verify and then answer that question. And then it's okay to say, okay, now let's take it to the second part of your question. Can you repeat it for me, please? I want to be sure I understood what you were asking. So I would literally put it back on that person. It also, not only does it bring clarity so that you can answer in an articulate way, it helps engage your audience a little more. So like we just spoke to you, we kind of broke our own rules. We could spoke to you for a really long time, but it gives you the opportunity for a free flowing kind of conversation, the opportunity to engage with the people in your audience. So that's how I would address that.
Yeah. And just to, if you're not comfortable stopping them partway through and you're like, oh my God, I already forgot. This happens to me a lot. I can't remember anything. I start with the last question, right? Like the one that's freshest in my mind, I answer that. And then I'm like, you know, can you remind me of your previous questions? And again, put it back on them and go from there.
My question is also about Q&A. If we just switch fields and we go to a room to present a work that the audience are more expert than we, than us, how do we manage Q&A if they're like super complicated for us? I know it's awkward, but this has happened to me before. So I just switched fields and then I presented a work that my audience knew better than me. And well, then I had a nightmare with the Q&A.
Well, a reminder that if it's your work, you're still the expert, right? So be confident about answering specifically on your work, right? Understanding how your work fits into a larger field can be challenging, especially as that's new. And so go back to being vulnerable. Like you can be like, I'm really excited about my transition to this field and that I've, you know, making this, I'd love to learn more about what, you know, what you're asking about. I see this fitting in this way or this way, you know. It's again, it's okay to admit when you don't know something, and you know, use those ABCs, right? Acknowledge the question, bridge right. it back to your message and conclude.
All right, thank you.
Hi there, is this on?
Yeah.
So many pearls of wisdom, thanks so much. That was really wonderful to hear. I've given many hundreds of lectures over the years. I wish I'd heard this some years back. But one thing I would like to share with you that for many, including myself, nervousness, anxiety, you know, it is a issue for all of us in public speaking. One thing that I've kind of learned to do and I've shared with some of my students and it seems to have an impact on them that's positive is to reframe that from, I'm not feeling nervous, I'm feeling excited. And by giving it that name and framing it that way, it really kind of changes my attitude, my the way that I deliver public speaking. So
I love that. And it's a reminder that words matter.
Hi, thank you so much for all of that information. I'm actually advancing to candidacy tomorrow, so this is greatly timed.
Good luck.
Thank you. I have been practicing my talk, but with so many things to think about, whenever we're kind of, you know, newer to speaking or as a trainee, what's the best way to practice our talks? Like, is it in front of a mirror? Is it in front of a friend to make sure we're telling our story well?
I love that question, and good luck. We're very excited for you. We film people when we're media training them with the questions, and we let them hear themselves. We let them hear their answers. We let them sit in that uncomfortable, oh my God, do I really look like that? Did I actually say that? Because that's where the learning comes from. And we've talked about that, right? Like revising yourself. That's okay. Those iterations are important. So if I were you tonight, I'd go home and I'd film yourself on your phone. And I would watch it back and sit there and be like, yes, I crushed that part. That part could use a little help. You know, I remember this as a kid when we had what are they called? Voicemail machines, right? You would like
answering machines.
Answering machines. Oh my gosh, I've aged myself. right? You would like hear your voice for the first time when you would like, hi, you've reached the Warshaws, please leave a message. And you're like, oh, my voice, because you don't hear yourself. So sit in that uncomfortable, and I would record yourself tonight and watch it back and do it alone or do it with someone you trust and you value their feedback, and they're going to be able to give you honest feedback.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being a power couple that made me really being hooked.
Couple, sorry. Are we a couple?
That really hooked me into your discussion, right? Your hook was amazing. So my question really relates to the hook. And as Rob mentioned and you mentioned, every talk you need to tailor it differently to the audience, to your goals. And every time the hook will be different or should be different. And I guess my question to you is, do you have any recommendations, tools, ideas of how we can practice ourselves to think about those hooks in different scenarios?
Well, often I find that until I'm in, like, approaching that scenario and really thinking about it, you know, that I'm not there yet, right? It takes time. And like I said, it's probably the thing I spend the most time on as I'm getting into a talk, right? And so, you know, as I said, this week I spoke at AACR, and I don't usually speak at cancer meetings, right? And so it was the way that I got into it was I wanted to connect to my audience as a cancer researcher, right? And I talked about, you know, as cancer researchers, we have a shared mission, right? Like that we're really trying to treat and to prevent cancer, right? A disease that touches every corner of humanity, right? But now I'm bringing in my own perspective on aging, right? Like we've made advances as cancer researchers, but one of the things that we've overlooked is aging, right? It's aging is the number one risk. And then I've now connected with the audience in one way and then brought them to something that they haven't really thought about to bridge them in, right? So what is that compelling question, right? Like in ways, you know, leading up to South by Southwest, I got a tip that one of the things their audience there loves is that they're like ahead of the curve. So you're letting them in on a secret, right? Audiences love like the, I'm gonna, you know, reveal a secret to you today. Like there's ways to do that and then to shape it into your research. So that's a tool that gets used. You know, sometimes the sweetest stories are the unexpected ones, right? You know, think about how a normal story is told or how you get hooked into a book or a TV show or a movie, right? There's an element of mystery to it, or there's an element of surprise, or there's an element of humor, right? Use those. It's storytelling. It's the same way that you would get, you know, anyone to want to sink their teeth into a story.
Okay, I'm going to build on that really quickly because I think we've totally failed to talk about the greatest invention in communication in my lifetime. You have creative license with storytelling that you do not have with your data. B, have you heard of ChatGPT? Because it's amazing. I use it. I feel like I'm cheating. I'm like, oh my God, I'm going to be out of a job. I seriously feel like I'm cheating every single day when I feed a prompt into it and I put my slides in and I say, help me come up with 5 awesome headlines. Help me find a way to engage my audience in the first 45 seconds of my talk with a story based on my childhood where I grew up in Israel and I have a dog and my cat, you know, I don't know, did something. And it will come up with something for you. And you'll be like, oh, that sparked an idea in me.
Yeah,
I'm going to use that as a starting point.
It's not there to give you verbatim what you're going to say.
No, it's a starting point.
Or write something that you like and say, give me 5 different versions of this, right? And put them together and find the one that works. Like you can do that, right?
It's not your data.
Yeah.
You have creative license and use the tools.
When you communicate, it's an opportunity to be creative with data. Like science is normally about truth and honesty and all these things. But when we give a talk, we don't have to present the experiments in the order that we did them, right? And we probably almost never do that. Sometimes figure one is the experiment you just did and figure seven is the one that you did 5 years ago, right? And that's okay. That's, you know, telling a story with the data and doing that and then finding words to be, you know, poignant about it or to do it. And you know, as Lisa says, the communicators are using all sorts of tools now to find new ways to do that, so.
We also have a ton of lawyers who read our work.
Okay, no more questions from the audience? Okay, so with that, I would like to thank Lisa and Rob really for these amazing talks. We're really inspired. And we're really looking forward to see how it's going actually to develop and to progress our scientific talks in the future. So thank you very much. And I just want to mention that this conference or this seminar was part of our sci-fi meetings. This is a special seminar. Next week is going to be our regular scientific talks from the trainees. But this is just the first out of a few special seminars that we're going to have. The next one is going to be by Dr. Shiri Gurkoyan about how to get a faculty position. So stay tuned, everyone. Thanks you all for coming.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.